through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, joining us now from the Mariners Radio Network, it is Gary Hill on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Hey, Gary, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm here. And Gary, just as a heads up, Jake is on paternity leave. Congratulations to the Heaps family for welcoming a baby girl. So in his place is Mike Salk. He was a radio host here. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
I've heard of him, yes.
I just wanted to introduce you guys.
Sorry to disappoint you. I know you were looking forward to talking with Jake. So I send my apologies in advance here, Gary.
Should I call you Jake the entire time?
Yes, Gary, I absolutely think you should.
Yeah, no, I'll respond to pretty much whatever.
Yeah.
But I'll assume it's after Jake Bowers, right? After the big throw, that's who you're referencing.
Well, that was pretty phenomenal, right? I didn't see that one coming. That was great.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Props to Kyle Seager, too, for a great tack. Hey, I actually wanted to start just with, obviously, this series, but specifically last night's game. One of our favorite stories coming out of it was, obviously, that kind of trash talk that Cole Irvin had coming back to bite him. That was one of the most fun things. The broadcast crew kept mentioning it. Players were clearly hinting at it. I mean, what was that like to cover it?
I love trash talk. I think it's the greatest. I wish, honestly, we had more trash talk. And it was the subtle jabs, I think, were my favorite after the game. Whether it was Tom Murphy on the walk-off was phenomenal. But I think we need more of it. I think we need more trash talk because it made yesterday even better than what it was. And yesterday was a phenomenal day. Everything about it was great. The crowds, for anyone who was there the last three ball games, the atmosphere was amazing. And we know it. I mean, the Seattle crowds are the best, no matter what sport you're talking about. If you're talking about the Seahawks, when the Sonics were rolling in the 90s, the Sounders, and when the Mariners were rolling, there's nothing like a Seattle crowd, and the Seattle crowd showed it off over the weekend. It was so great, and I'm looking forward to this next stretch because I think it could be pretty fun.
So, Gary, I saw your tweet and the bunch of one-run wins over the A's, right? I mean, six wins and seven runs, right? So,
yeah, pretty absurd.
Yeah. What do you make of it? I mean, when you're talking and you're Jerry Dipoto and you're getting ready for the deadline and you're trying to figure out what to invest – how much faith can you put in these one-run and close-game wins where you're still looking at a differential that's in the negative? How do you balance all that together to get a clear sense of what kind of team you're dealing with?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And the run differential has been a big part of the conversation, right? I mean, they're minus 52 on the season. And for the record that they have, it's pretty amazing to see where they are. Now, I think the conversation about run differential is a little more nuanced than on the surface because of the bullpen, and that's been the X factor. When I look, and the A's are a great example of how the Mariners season has played out. So they're 6-4 against the A's this year, right? And they've won those six games by seven runs. And those four losses, they've lost those by a combined like 18 runs. And part of it is how every bullpen works in baseball, at least how I look at it, is you have your A part of your bullpen and your B part of the bullpen. Now, what the Mariners have is a very deep A part. They have a team right now where you feel comfortable with four different guys closing out a ball game, which is pretty unheard of in modern baseball. And then when you add Sadler and even Swanson to that mix, it makes a really deep bullpen. So what we've seen against Oakland, we've seen a bunch of games, and not just the A's, but it's played out against the A's, where bullpen comes in, they throw zeros on the board, they're either holding the lead or they're allowing the offense to do just enough to come back and score runs. That's why I think it's kind of a nuanced conversation in terms of why they're playing better than their run differential because of the makeup of their team and their bullpen. And I think that you can expect, I don't think this is fluky. I think you can expect the bullpen to be good the rest of the way. So getting back to your question is, I don't think their strategy has changed. I think they would like to add, clearly, but I also think they would like to add pieces that will help them moving forward for not just this next year as well, and perhaps even the year after if possible.
Hey, Gary, speaking of moving forward in the short term, in the next 3 weeks or so, the Mariners are going to have a series against the A's. Obviously, this is the upcoming one, but then a series against Tampa and New York, the Yankees. And so while we're going to figure out where this team is as a playoff team, do you see them as a legitimate contender right now, if even for a wild card spot?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this series showed that. I think it was a big series coming in against the A's, and they took three of four. I mean, I think they put themselves, they vaulted themselves right into the mix. And I don't think when you get to August and you're a couple games back, like, that's legit. And they're in the mix of things. And it's funny, we talk about the A's being the biggest series of the season so far. When you keep winning and are successful, you continue to have biggest series of the season so far. So now we're staring at the Houston Astros in a three-game series. That's going to be the biggest one if they continue to play well. This next trip that you referenced, it starts off in Texas playing the Rangers for three games, but then the Rays for three games after that and the Yankees for four after that. That is a long, grueling, tough trip against a couple teams right in the mix. But yeah, they are in this.
All right, looking a little further down the road, and by that I mean potentially a couple years, Baseball America has their new top 100 updates, and they have four Mariners in the top 15 prospects in baseball. Obviously, Julio Jared in there, but Noelvi Marte in there, and George Kirby in there. I mean, how do you interpret that news? Where do you see their farm system? Obviously, it's great, but does that add to the excitement? Is that how you already saw them?
Oh, I think so. I think it adds to it. And I think when you think about where this is all going, I think Mariner fans can get very excited when you look at the prospect wealth, I guess is how I'd put it, and not just kind of the bigger names that we've been talking about, but some of the success stories they're having with some guys that really aren't on a lot of people's radars. And I think a lot of things are happening, and we've seen it. You know, part of the bullpen story is the names that we weren't expecting, right? The Seawalds of the world, who has come on and has been one of the best relievers in the American League. The strikeout rate's ridiculous. And it's not just luck how this is happening. It's development, and that's how it's happening. Development is critical in modern baseball. It's everything. And it's whether you're talking about a guy who was drafted 1-1 or a guy you picked up as a minor league free agent. And we've seen it with the Dodgers winning the World Series. You know, they're not buying their way to the World Series. They're picking up guys like Max Muncy, turning them into real, real legitimate players. Justin Turner, another guy like that. They're also signing guys, and they're also having great success in the draft. You have to do everything well at this stage to be a really good team. And I think there's some really good signs moving forward for this team with what they're doing in the minor league system, their draft, and their development. There's a lot of things that are going really well right now, which leads, you look down the road, and it's some good signs for things to come, that's for sure.
But maybe, you know, if they decide that maybe they want to offer a contract to their general manager or their manager, who both continue to just twist in the wind without it, trade deadline coming up, but we'll save that conversation because we've probably had it too often. I'll be simple. Who do you want? Trade deadline's a couple days away, Gary. Who do you want? What are you willing to give up to get him?
Oh, that's the question, right? I mean, that's what it always comes down to, that when it comes to trade deadline. It's easy, I think, to name who you want. It's the giving up part. That's the tough thing. If I'll give you my wish list, dreaming big, right? So I would love to add rotation pieces. So Germán Márquez is a guy that I would love to add. Luis Castillo is my other dream, who I would love to add, and I would give up a lot for both guys because I think both would be enormous for this team now.
So when you say a lot, what does that mean? You say you're willing to give up a lot. Is it any of those four guys Stacy just mentioned?
No, I'm not giving up those guys.
Okay, Cal Raleigh?
I'm not giving up the top guys. I'm just not doing it. And I just think there's too much value when you're talking about top guys in Major League Baseball right now. And I'm actually interested to see where trades go. We're not seeing, really since, I don't know, the Chapman trade with the Cubs and Yankees a few years ago, where they got they got a big piece back. But for the Cubs, that was the missing piece. Chapman was the missing piece. They got Gleyber Torres back, which was a huge deal at the time. We're just not seeing those type of prospects being traded anymore.
Mitch Haniger and Kendall Graveman, the two names being thrown around by a lot of MLB analysts figuring out who's going to be traded. What would you do with either of those guys?
That's a great question. I would hold, at this point, both those guys. Given how this last week has played out, Haniger, man, he has been so good. I love, one of my favorite things is watching Mitch Haniger get on these kind of rolls where he's just unbelievable. He gets in these streaks where he's just crushing everything, just pulling homers out of the ballpark, smashing doubles. He's in one of those right now. And if you're going to stay in contention, I mean, I think you need him around, clearly, offensively. Now, if a team comes to you and offers you the moon for, like, Kendall Graveman, like, yeah, you listen. I think you always listen because you never know. The Austin Nola thing, I don't think any of us saw that trade coming a year ago, so you always have to listen. But I think if depending on the offers you get, I think you have to hold.
He is Gary Hill of the Mariners Radio Network. Gary, thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime. This is fun.
See you, buddy.
Mike, I haven't had a chance to ask you yet. Would you keep Mitch Haniger?
Well, yeah. I mean, it doesn't sound like they've had any success with a contract, long-term extension kind of conversation with him. So, you know, the idea of trading him is not like out of the realm of my possibility. And I know what he means to the team right now. And the reason that I don't think you can do it ultimately is because I think of what we talked about before. You'd be telling the guys you just don't believe in them enough. Mm-hmm. There is a part of me, I'll admit, that says, gosh, what you could get for him right now.
His trade value is the highest it'll be.
The way he's playing at this time, and gosh, if you had gotten swept by the A's instead of taking 3 out of 4, but Haniger had done everything he had just done in the series, what you could get from Mitch Haniger right now and the kind of pressure that he's putting on opposing pitchers, his ability to take that outside pitch and pull it down, I mean, it's bizarre. You don't see that much of it. He's really hitting the ball well, and he's obviously a five-tool player. So, yeah, I'm probably not dealing him. I think that would be a real challenge for you in the situation you're in right now. But I'm certainly still listening because I just can't help it. I'll tell you one better because I saw a text here earlier that was throwing out an idea for a potential Whit Merrifield trade. And that's mm-hmm. the guy who's been rumored to be a target of the Mariners second baseman for the Royals who's going to be around for a few more years at decent money. And the deal they proposed was, let me see if I can find it here. It was Jake Fraley,
okay.
Shed Long, and somebody else, Taylor Trammell. So would you do that deal? Yeah, probably, right?
Yes.
I don't know that the Royals do that deal, but okay, yeah, I'll probably trade Trammell, Fraley, and Shed Long for Merrifield, three guys who haven't done squat really in the league for a guy who clearly has and who'd be on your team for a few more years. But what if I take one of those guys out and add Kyle Lewis to the deal? You willing to deal Kyle Lewis, Shed Long, and Jake Fraley for Whit Merrifield?
It's Long and Fraley are not the... I'm indifferent. It's with Kyle Lewis, it's all age. It is, do I take the upside that maybe he comes back healthy, and what if I trade him for a 32-year-old that helps me for 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
Is that 32-year-old the difference between me now and me as a World Series team? Or part of it? Is he
Kyle
part of the
Lewis,
recipe?
Though? I mean, I guess I'm at
But Kyle Lewis has... How many years left does Kyle Lewis have versus Merrifield?
I don't know. The guy's injured his knee every year he's been alive.
Well, and
so,
they're serious injuries,
I mean, like,
which is why I'm nervous.
Yeah, I don't know what other teams view him, and I'm sure that his value is limited because of those injuries, but do you feel good about dealing him? Like, to me, you're going to have to give up something.
Well, that's the thing. I feel much more confident. Kyle Lewis is not an untouchable player.
Okay.
Like, I have a list of players where I would be more hesitant to give... This is going to sound stupid. I'd be more hesitant to give up Mitch Haniger than I would for Kyle Lewis.
I don't think that sounds stupid at all.
Yeah.
To me, you're going to have to give something up. If there are teams out there that see a higher value in Kyle Lewis and are willing to take the injury risk, to me, that's something you've got to do.
All right. It is time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
Well, not today. We got Saul instead. First down, Mike. which Seahawk are you most excited to see at training camp?
Obvious answer for me is Daryl Taylor. You know, essentially one of their top picks from a year ago and now making his debut, at least for our eyes. We never got a chance to see him last year. He in essence, is their top pick from this year, right? He has the ability to step right in and be a starting linebacker for them, to rush the passer on third down, something I'm still not convinced they can do enough of. So if Daryl Taylor is the player that they thought they might even draft in the first round a year ago and eventually took in the second round and then missed the entire year due to his injury, you know, there's a lot of pressure on that. As we're judging John Schneider and trying to figure out whether these last few drafts have been worth anything, Daryl Taylor would be an enormous step forward if he starts to contribute this year and shows himself not to be a bust. So, you know, the athletic ability is certainly there. He built like a Greek god. I mean, he just absolutely has the physique to be a rush linebacker coming in on third downs. But can he do it? Yeah, my eyes are squarely on him. If Brock and I used to do our most intriguing Seahawks every year, he would probably be number one, certainly not outside the top two or three, of my most intriguing players to watch this year.
Second down. Stacy?
Yes.
Do you expect Jamal Adams to participate in camp if he does report on time?
I do not expect him to participate in camp, but let me give you guys an update from NFL Network's Ian Rappaport. He said that Adams is expected to be at camp. He says, quote, "I don't expect any issues at all with Adams showing up." He adds, and this is my favorite part of it, that eventually both sides will be happy with a deal and Adams will likely be a very, very rich man. Who knew that millions of dollars in a contract could make someone rich? If I were Jamal Adams, I would not participate in camp, and I don't think that Jamal Adams will. We've seen him kind of advocate for his worth with the Jets. I think he's in a much better situation in terms of his own satisfaction with the direction the Seahawks are moving in. But why would you go out there and participate? And I don't think that's different from what any other player would do. We saw this with Bobby Wagner before. Jamal Adams is on the precipice of being guaranteed tens of millions of dollars over the course of his career. And right now, today, he's only got $9 million guaranteed. You don't want to risk giving that up. I think fans should feel good about him reporting in any capacity and should not expect him to be participating.
Third down. Mike, Stacy was talking with Chris Francis over at Cairo the other day.
Oh, power couple.
Yeah, Chris
Power
Francis and yeah. Stacy, when those two get together, mountains move in this town. Does it matter if Russell Wilson is happy? Question mark.
This year? Like, does it matter if he's happy this year?
This year, yes.
It was an interesting question from Chris. He said,
not really.
Is Russell happy? Does it matter if he's happy?
When I said not really, I meant to answer the question, not saying that it wasn't interesting. It is an interesting question. I don't think it matters this year. It probably matters whether he's happy by the end of the year and whether or not he wants to return to the Seahawks or whether or not we're going to get a more serious exploration of teams that he would hypothetically not mind being traded to.
Well, probably matters or does matter?
No, it does. If by the end of this season he's not happy and doesn't like what went on with their new offense and everything else, yeah, I think that will matter. I don't know that it matters to start the year. I mean, he's here. He's under contract. He's going to go out and play as hard as he can and either try to show that he's, you know, going to make it here or make it somewhere else. I don't think it matters right now, but eventually it will matter.
Fourth down.
What did Chris Francis say?
He just asked me.
Oh, he didn't have an answer?
No, I said it mattered. I said that basically it's professional football, and we all have these tenets of football that we accept and we collectively, we hate on players who hold out or players who say they're unhappy, but at the end of the day, it's a business. And that the quarterback's the most valuable commodity. There's a handful of them that are good enough to be paid a bajillion dollars. And if there was no salary cap at all, a team would be willing to pay Russell Wilson way more than the Seahawks are paying him.
Fourth down, Stacy, what's something you want to see by the end of the 2021 season?
Now, obviously, the answer a lot of Seahawks fans want to see is Russell Wilson hoisting the Lombardi Trophy. You want to see the Seahawks win the Super Bowl. So I'm specifically looking at what I want to see when it comes to team evaluation with draft choices. So we talked about this a bit the other day, and this team, not since 2015 with Frank Clark, has had players that have gone on to be Pro Bowlers. You had Shaquille Griffin as a Pro Bowl alternate. from the 2017 draft. It's been a while otherwise since the team has drafted defensive players that have gone on to be Pro Bowlers.
And neither of those guys are here.
Which is an important note. Now you have DK Metcalf as a recent example of an offensive player who was a Pro Bowler that's still here. Tyler Lockett, another example. But it's not like you're also like flooding with names on that side of the ball. But if this is going to be a team that prides itself on having a physical, aggressive defense, and that defensive side of the ball is going to be Pete Carroll's bread and butter, well, you need to also show that you're reaching that that level, that area you want to reach when it comes to the accolades that team is getting and when it comes to investing draft capital. I don't just want your best players to be ones that you gave up $18 million for or two first-round picks for. Ideally, some of your best players are also guys playing on rookie deals.
That's a really good point. I mean, for them to have offensive players that succeed, fine, good. Mm-hmm. That's important, and you got Russell Wilson, you got to provide him with the right weaponry, but you stated it, and you're right. Pete Carroll wants an aggressive, defensive-minded team, and they don't seem to be drafting defensive players that are reaching that level of potential. Maybe Jordan Brooks gets there this year, I think, with much more consistent playing time. I think he's going to have a really good year. I'm excited for Jordan Brooks. Maybe we see Marquise Blair finally break out and be healthy. Maybe Jamal Adams. I mean, but somebody's going to have to really show up defensively because Bobby Wagner doesn't seem to be the player he once was. No offense, sorry. And they haven't had difficulty getting to the quarterback. So, to me, that's an enormous question, is who in this defense is going to not just play well, but make game-changing plays on a consistent basis.
Well, and here's another problem. There's a good chance that all four of your starters in the secondary will be players you didn't draft.
Mm.
And so while that's also great acquisition, for instance, I'm not going to knock John Schneider for getting DJ Reed off the waiver wire when the 49ers gave up on him and were hoping to slip him through. That's actually a great move. It's a very heads-up move as a GM. That, and same with getting Witherspoon in on a cheap free agent deal if he ends up being a big deal. But it still is a kind of damning against your own draft history when you've got Marquise Blair that you spent a second-round pick on, and you've got other guys.
Trey Flowers.
Shaquille Griffin you didn't end up giving a second contract to. I mean, that's still not great.
Well, I think you're right because it's somewhat damning. The best thing about draft picks starting and contributing for you is that they're cheap.
Right.
You don't have to pay them.
Well, look at Tampa Bay. That's exactly what they got. They got a great front seven with a couple cheap first-rounders in there. All right. The Mariners have waited more than 2 months to really stick it to A's pitcher Cole Irvin, and it was worth the wait. We'll tell you what Mariners players had to say after the game. It's coming up next in the Timeline.
This is the Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
This hour, Jake and Stacey, is brought to you by the Pro Club. Jake out on paternity leave. Hello to the Heaps fam in Baby River. In his place, Mike Salk. Thanks for joining us today, Mike.
The Heaps are having a famine?
They're a famine? Did I say the Heaps fam?
The Heaps famine.
Famine?
Oh, Heaps fam Heaps. And river.
And river.
I thought
and
there was a famine.
River. No, no, no famine for the Heaps
second
fam.
Second plague.
I'm going to the Timeline, Mike. The Timeline. Now, I know that you've hosted once before with me, but just an explainer. We tell people what's cool and popular. We are the measuring stick of what's cool and hip. Right, Curtis? Right?
Well, we'll go with that.
Well, okay. I feel like I'm the perfect person to take over for Jake. Neither of us have any idea what's cool or hip.
That's what I was thinking.
So we just defer to you and Curtis.
Wonderful. So here's what's trending on your own timeline. Let's start with Cole Irvin making the rounds both with A's Twitter and Mariners Twitter. For why? Because when they last played, cut number 7, this is what he had to say.
Really, a team like that, I mean, yeah, there was a lot of weak contact and some swings that, you know, ended up being hits, but I think at the end of the day, just pitch execution needs to be a lot better, and a team like that should not be putting up 10 hits against me or anyone. I mean, I'm extremely disappointed in my efforts tonight.
I gotta say, that's even worse than I remember it being.
It's
even worse than I remember, right? Cole Irvin, Cy Young. Oh no, sorry, not a Cy Young winner there. Cole Irvin. Yeah, it's so Cole ends up facing this team again. They got 10 hits on him. And obviously the Mariners win, and that includes, what, 4 runs in the third or something like that?
Yeah, he didn't even make it past the fourth.
6 straight Mariners get on base. And the way that Mariners players approached it afterward had to be coordinated. Let's start with Tom Murphy. This is what Tom Murphy had to say when asked, hey, did you kind of like sticking it to Cole Irvin again?
Honestly, we don't even remember facing him. Like, yeah, I mean, we came in today just like he was every other pitcher, and, you know, we treated him just like we would a pitcher like that.
A pitcher like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And but the thing is, J.P. Crawford ended up posting to his Instagram story a picture of a printed out tweet from a reporter that included Cole Irvin's statement about no one should ever give up that many hits to a team like that, mm-hmm. with a picture of Cole Irvin. I appreciated the artistic aspect to it. And I have told myself that they printed that out and gave multiple copies to the clubhouse.
I'm sure they did. Yeah. I mean, when there's bulletin board material, it's so rare, you got to take advantage of it. Two things on this. One, I don't think Cole Irvin was wrong. Like, where the Mariners were at the time he said that, they were awful. They couldn't hit. They'd been no hit twice, nearly no hit a few other times.
Yeah, but you still gave up 10 hits. Like, then that's a you problem.
Well, but he said that. He was taking ownership for it and saying, I didn't execute. I didn't play
was
well.
Was he, or was he saying, oh, there's weak contact?
Both.
Some swings ended up
he
being
said,
hit.
I should. I take responsibility. I shouldn't be giving up hits, that many hits to that team, nor should anybody else. He was stating, look, it's not that I'm Cy Young. That team's awful. And he was right. But it's a different team that he faces today. And baseball has a culture that just doesn't allow comments like this. And Matt, in fact, for the most part, sports seems to have entirely gone away from people talking trash like this. I mostly blame guys like Bill Belichick, who seem better than anyone able to like focus those exact comments and then make the person pay. Who was the safety for the Steelers who talk some trash about the Patriots, and Belichick and Brady made like a specific point to burn him personally like four times on a Monday night game. It was like,
I love
it. And they've gone deep again on so like you are asking for trouble if you step out of line. But don't you wish more guys would step out of line?
Well, I'll say that this game was far more entertaining, not just because of the way that this series was won by Seattle. There was a wild pitch. All that stuff is great. The Cole Irvin, it's not a rivalry, but that aspect to it made this game more fun.
It made it personal.
Yeah.
Don't you wish more games were personal?
Well, and it plays into what you love most about the Mariners, that people underestimate them and then they come out and surprise you. And that's exactly what they did this time, right?
They were certainly underestimated and, in fact, insulted by this guy. And then they went out, made it personal, and found a way to knock him out of the game early. I love that. I just wish we had more room in sports for these things. The problem is, anytime anyone says something like Cole Irvin did, the other team reacts, they print the bulletin board material, and then they wipe the guy out. Well, guess what happens? Cole Irvin will learn his lesson and never say anything like this again, right? He's not Deion Sanders. Few people are. So he's not going to continue to talk smack. He's not going to continue to give bulletin board material. And other players around him will look at that and say, see, no good deed, right? That's the problem with this. As much as I love the Mariners destroying him, mm-hmm. it's just further lessons for other people not to do this. And it's too bad. This makes sports better.
I want more trash talk in baseball specifically.
So how do we get it? How do you get it without punishing people every time they do something
you,
like this?
You have an occasional no-hitter thrown against you. That's the trick. All the Mariners need
to
do...
Like, you sucker people in?
That's what it is. They need to do the rope-a-dope, allowing a no-hitter, right. Allow a perfect game against you.
Right.
And then come back out and in full swing.
Okay.
I think that's what you
well,
do.
Well, they've done the first part of it this year.
I like telling myself those two no-hitters in the span of 2 weeks was on purpose to get Cole Irvin to bite.
Yes.
Then you can come back out.
It helped them win the game yesterday that
yes.
they got... Hey, look, we were going to lose.
This series started...
We might as well get no hit.
This series started May 12th.
Okay.
With that second no-hitter.
It really is the long game.
First no-hitter, one of the no-hitters.
That's impressive.
That's what I'm saying. When I talk about Scott Service needing an extension, it's because of moments like this, that planned no-hitter. Next story here, Andy Benoit has been hired by the Rams as the special assistant to Sean McVay. You guys know him as the Sports Illustrated hot take expert. He's had a couple really bad, horrible opinions.
What? Like what?
Not just a couple.
What does he say? I kind of know the name, but I'm not... Is he like Skip Bayless? Like, what does he say?
No, not Skip Bayless level. No one is really Skip Bayless level. It's what makes him so special and unique.
Right.
Well, if you'll remember this take from, a couple years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Him saying he would take Jacoby Brissett over Russell Wilson.
If you're factoring in price, I am without question. I mean, like I am doing Jacoby, especially if I can get something for Russell Wilson, which we're going to dive into. But if it's just even head to head, Jacoby Brissett for what, 10, 12 million a year, maybe for the first couple years versus Russell Wilson at 30 plus million a year. I'm taking Jacoby Brissett and I'm going home early because I didn't have to spend much time on that decision.
So there's that. Okay. Also, never
now
forget.
Now I understand who
he's
we're
in a position
with.
Of power with the Los Angeles Rams.
There isn't. There isn't sound of it, but there was also him retweeting someone who said women's. I think they said women's soccer is hard to watch, and he retweeted and said that women's sports in general hard to watch.
Oh, I should have said soccer is hard to watch because that would have been much more accurate.
Right. Or maybe it was someone giving a compliment to the U.S. women's national team. I forget what it was, but made a knock against women's sports in general being really hard to watch. And people were like, bro, why are you trolling? You're an actual sports writer.
Right.
Like, you can't
not
say.
Not a lot of upside there.
No.
So he's now going to be, what, running buddies with Sean McVay? Is that kind of the idea here? McVay hired somebody
what a special
that he could go drinking with?
I don't know what a special assistant would do. Now, I do buy that this guy is really, really smart about football, right? And seemingly maybe a bro.
He just said he'd take Jacoby Brissett over Russell Wilson. How smart could he be?
Well, I guess I was thinking maybe, I was going to say X's and O's, but even then, that wouldn't really excuse that take.
I think this bodes well for me. I once said that I would take John Rawls over Ezekiel Elliott, so maybe Pete Carroll will hire me for a big job here with the Seahawks.
Yeah, you never know. I don't like the hire in general. I don't like Andy Benoit. I'll say it to his face because he'll never
Jacoby
hear me,
Brissett, 12-20
radio.
Career record and 32 starts.
Well, and also, what kind of take is it to say, oh, I wouldn't want to spend that much money on a quarterback, I can build around that, when most of the examples we've seen of franchises winning Super Bowls have been because they have a franchise quarterback. Like, Seattle's a little bit an outlier, but they had a great quarterback. He was just on a rookie deal.
I really want to know what this says about McVay, though. Like, what is, because nobody thinks he can do anything wrong, right?
Maybe he wants a drinking buddy.
That's kind of what it seems like. Yeah. And we've seen baseball managers, hey, who's your bench coach? That's my buddy who I like to go drinking with at night. Like, I mean, we've seen that culture for years in sports. A little bit less obvious than this, but I don't know. They both seem to have some of the same energy. Maybe that'll work for them in L.A.
All right, Kyle Seeger says, at some point it has to be about winning for the Mariners. Is that point now, and what are you willing to give up? That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy this hour, brought to you by the Pro Club. Mike Salkin for Jake Heaps today and tomorrow and Thursday. Jake back Friday. And it's actually great to have you in, Mike, because you've been, I think, having some of my favorite takes about the Mariners rebuild in general, whether it be about how rebuilds aren't just linear, what you give up. And a lot of the conversation we're having this week is one that we knew we'd be having about the Mariners, but I personally didn't think we'd be having this soon, which is, when do you start winning? I thought this would be not just much later this season, but potentially middle of next year.
Yeah, I think you probably join a lot of people in that. And I don't know that I was any different from you other than just hearing, you know, Scott and Jerry and them, the way they talked about it, saying, hey, look, we're going to get better over the course of this year. The team we see in the second half will be better than the team we roll out in the first half. And the fact that the first half team kept it as competitive and as close and won as many games as they did, I think bodes really well for what we're now starting to see, which is them playing better and better. If it continues, they very much are in that playoff hunt. And if they want to be there and they want to break this drought, and if they want to find a way forward, they're going to need to add things. What they can't do is get their eyes anywhere off the prize, which is that next year through 2023 or four is really when their window is at its fullest. So what you add needs to not just help this year if you're giving up any significant resource. It needs to contribute towards your goals of winning World Series, not just making the playoffs.
So I guess what you're saying is it can't just be, hey, it's okay to aim for a wild card spot this year as long as you don't give up anything for the future. But ideally, what you gain in your attempt to get to a wild card this year can help you. That's the best scenario. It's someone that can help you next year.
Yeah, it's why I think the second base market ends up becoming very indicative of and shows us a lot about what they're thinking. Who did they go after first? Yesterday we learned that they were in on Adam Frazier, who ended up going to San Diego. The most interesting thing I read about that, and Adam Frazier is really good. He's the best second baseman who was available. He can hit. He gets on base. He makes contact. He's a lot of the things the Mariners needed. The only problem with him is that he's left-handed. Okay, fine. Well, they went out there and were willing to take on more money. They just weren't willing to give up as many prospects as the Padres were. Well, that's telling in two ways. First of all, it tells us that they had a limit that they weren't willing to go past in terms of prospects. Good. They've got some really good, high-quality prospects, four as of today in the top 15, according to Baseball America. You can't go crazy giving up prospects. But two, for everybody out there who says, oh, this ownership will never spend, this, that, and the other, you might be right. But also, we got a pretty good clue here that they were willing to spend. They were willing to kick in money to not have to give up more prospects. It didn't work with Adam Frazier. But that doesn't mean it won't work with somebody else. Okay, maybe Pittsburgh didn't need that. But if another team does need that salary relief, if you're able to take it on, that's a really positive development for the Mariners and what they can do moving forward.
I have a question for you. First, I need you to listen to this cut from Kyle Seager in cut number one. This was after the series against the A's.
You know, at some point it has to be about winning. You know, that's the goal of, you know, baseball. You're not, you know, you don't necessarily always want to be playing for, you know, rebuilds and doing those other stuff, especially, you know, me, you know, kind of where I'm at. You know, I want to be playing for something, you know, bigger than myself. I want to be playing for something, you know, big. And, you know, you can feel how much this city is just, you know, starving for it. You can see with the fans. I mean, it's been way too long, obviously. But, yeah, it you have to be about winning.
Now, we all know you have to be about winning is something that applies to any sports team every single day. Everyone wants to win. What's Kyle Seager asking for?
Well, he's putting some pressure on the organization to give them the reinforcements they need, right? I mean, he doesn't know how much longer he's going to be here. He does want to make the postseason. Maybe he's learned. Maybe he learned not to take this for granted. In 2017, they had an opportunity. The Astros were coming to town. Kyle Seager was having a baby that week, and he decided not to play at all against the Astros. If I remember correctly, the team got swept, and they probably could have used him in that moment. I don't know that he did the wrong thing. But there were certainly some stories and rumors that came out later that the reason he decided not to play was to show Gene Segura up because Segura had made the same decision a couple of weeks or months earlier. Okay. I mean, he had the right to do that, but I don't know where he gets off putting pressure on everybody else and saying you've got to go all in to try to win when he didn't necessarily do the same thing just a couple of years ago. Now, maybe he's learned from that and has started to understand how fragile this is, how short careers really can be, and the importance of taking advantage of opportunities when you get them. But I get where he's coming from, and I think that there's a lot of players on this team that would agree. We've done what we were asked to do. Now do your part and get us some reinforcements, especially in the rotation.
Is it just reinforcements, or is it also saying don't break down? Because the way I interpreted it was also don't break down and take away pieces that are helping us to build toward the future. Don't trade Mitch for prospects that are going to help us in 2 years. Trade a young prospect you maybe aren't sure about and get someone that helps us now.
That's a great point. I mean, I think he's saying both of those things and asking and putting the pressure on for them to go and look. If the team decides to push this thing down the road, he's not going to be here. So that doesn't help him at all. There's nothing in it for Kyle Seager for them to, as you said, trade Mitch Haniger for prospects. Because mm-hmm. if that's the case, they're probably also trading Kyle Seager for prospects. So in his mind, it's sort of he can't lose either way. Either he's here and they add or he's not here and they subtract. So, I mean, he's in a pretty good spot, don't you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think that I am not convinced that this team will be buyers and sellers at the deadline. I know that that's like the logical thing. We're all assuming they'll be buyers and sellers, but I understand the sentiment of it is very tempting as a GM with a great farm system, including we learned this morning four prospects in the top 15 in all of baseball, mm-hmm. to continue to add to that list of prospects. It incentivizes, ownership when it comes to trying to tell them, look how many good pieces I have for the future, and we weren't trying to win this year anyway. I mean, I understand the fear of thinking, what if they don't add? What if they're just tempted to keep adding to prospects? It's what they've been doing for a couple years.
I don't think they can do that now. I mean, unless you get swept by the Astros here, which, by the way, is not like out of the realm of possibility. Nope. I would be pretty surprised if they dealt significant pieces off their major league team. But, you know, when you talk about sort of splitting, buying and selling and doing a little of both, does that count if it's Jake Fraley or Shed Long or Kyle Lewis or Luis Torrens? I mean, those are guys that I think you can understandably deal right now without feeling like you're sacrificing your big club, depending on what you're getting back. What if you trade some of your prospects, I don't know, name a guy, Williamson and Fenn, and you get back a player like Merrifield, but in order to balance that off, you deal a Luis Torrens,
I think, if it's at the
to
bottom
bring
of
back
the rotation,
a couple of a couple of guys who were similar to the guys who you got rid of as prospects.
Yeah.
I think there's some value to doing something like that where you're not necessarily weakening your farm system, but what you're doing is changing some of the makeup and complexion of your club.
Now, that does become a little complicated because Torrens has, what, 12 home runs this season?
Sure.
So, I mean, you're also giving up a guy that has more home runs than a couple guys in the top of your lineup, more home runs than France, more home runs than JP, who's not really going to be a power hitter anyway, but more home runs than I think anyone except for Seager and Haniger.
Yeah. But, so, I mean, like, if you want stuff, you've got to give up stuff. This is not a simple game of we get to acquire and don't have to give everything up. You've got to be willing, and Jerry DePoto's done a good job of this, you've got to be willing to take a chance.
All right, our most important Seahawks countdown continues, and we're inside the top 10 with number 8, so don't go anywhere. We're getting you ready for Seahawks training camp next.